The Seductive Language Black Book, Module 5, with Dr. Steve G. Jones. Number 10, intoxication and role-playing. It's not just drugs and alcohol that can be intoxicating. A seducer's words can be equally effective in numbing the mind and altering the perception of another person. When a person wants and believes in something so badly, they become drunk on fantastical possibilities, and no amount of objective reality can convince a person's mind to think otherwise. What are the implications of this mental vulnerability? We call it a vulnerability because it's an opening for all seducers and influencers. If we can agree that a person can desire something so much that they will be willing to disregard objective reality, then all that's left is to fill the gap created by the burning desire. Here's the formula for this technique. Context leads to feedback, which leads to burning or dark desire, which leads to fantasy, which leads to role-playing. Let's look at the elements of the formula and see how they come together to help produce the seductive reverberations that we need. 1. Context and feedback. This formula won't work if you're not familiar with your subject. Apart from the basic knowledge about your subject, such as knowing what they do or what they're interested in, you have to be able to break through the first-degree defenses so that your subject will begin sharing intimate details about themselves. This will work regardless of what type of seduction you want to carry out. There's seduction geared toward intimacy, and there's social seduction, which is used in businesses and organizations. Either way, you're going to need more than just surface information. This leads us to the next item, which is 2, burning or dark desire. A burning or dark desire is different from a general, central desire that many people will freely share with other people. For example, it's fairly common to hear people talking about buying a new house or car. There's nothing shameful or embarrassing about potentially having one of these. There's nothing scandalous or startling about the desire to have more wealth. However, what if your subject lets it slip that they're actually thinking of spending their life savings on gambling? This type of information can be utilized to increase the power of the seducer 100-fold. Why? Because you can use it for fantasy and role-playing. Now, you might be thinking, why not just use such information as leverage so the subject will owe us favors? That's indirect blackmailing, and that's not part of the seductive process. In fact, if you resort to blackmailing, you may end up with a court case and possible fines and even jail time. Don't resort to any technique that will make another person think that they are being coerced into doing something. It doesn't matter how small the scale of the favor that you're asking. If you have to remind your subject that you know his or her dirt, that is not seduction. 3. Fantasy. The next step is the toughest one for the seducer. Now that you know your subject's burning or dark desire, you have to integrate that information with your own narrative while ensuring that your actual resources can deliver. If you're going to make offers and make your subject hope that they will get something from believing and following what you want, you have to be able to deliver. In the event that you don't deliver what you promise, you will be labeled as a deceiver and an untrustworthy person. Seducers may be known for being enamored with multiple individuals, but they are not known as deceivers. They might be known for their unorthodox methods of creating appearance and illusions that shock and awe, but they do deliver what they promise in their own unique way. A good fantasy should be indirect. Give your subject cues and let them flesh out the details. You're there primarily to maintain the conditions needed for fantasy to occur. 4. Role-playing. The final element in this technique is role-playing. Once you have decided on the exact fantasy that you want to introduce to your subject, the next step is to transform yourself into a character of this fantasy. Through your natural leadership, your subject will also become part of the fantasy, and they will begin enjoying the newfound freedom associated with living a fantasy, no matter how fleeting the moments are. Keep in mind that you must have a central role in the fantasy making. So how do you know that your strategy is working? On the whole, people do not like the idea of revealing that their defenses have been lowered, and they now want to be led by another person. Expect your subject to be timid and non-expressive, especially if they don't know you well. However, this doesn't mean that your subject won't be showing any signs that seduction is working. You have to monitor all 3 channels of communication in order to pick up the vital signs of seduction. vocal, nonverbal, and verbal. Vocal signs include sudden changes in the subject's voice, such as gradual or sudden deepening or softening of the tone of the voice. Softening of the voice indicates trust and comfort, while a deeper tone is associated with hypnosis, which means you've also successfully induced a hypnotic trance in your subject using your technique and selected language patterns. Verbal signs include continuous agreement with your ideas and being more talkative and open about small and intimate details about their lives. When you sense that your subject is becoming more open to you, you should also start being more of an active listener. Don't sweat the seemingly insignificant details. Not everyone feels comfortable sharing these things. The fact that your subject is sharing them with you means that you're considered a trusted confidant. Nonverbal signals include sudden changes in posture, facial expressions, and general body language, small smiles, fleeting glances, placing the hands under the chin. These all signal a strange attraction to you, and the subject can't quite explain it yet. Don't forget to reciprocate these nonverbal signals to show the subject that you feel the same way about them. Number 11, the VIP effect. It's no secret that people want special treatment. When another person makes you feel special, you immediately latch on to this person because you believe that they see the real you or the ideal projection of yourself that you have in your mind. This is another important opening that seducers can take advantage of. The linguistic formula for the VIP effect is context leads to subject feedback, which leads to central desire, which leads to enthronement, which leads to dependency. Here's how it works. After establishing where your subject is coming from, your next task is to find out your subject's biggest desires. Sometimes it can be difficult to utilize a person's central desire. If this is the case, identify other strong urges and desires that you can work with and use these instead. Work downward from the biggest desires until you find a suitable one that is manageable, given your resources and your time and the context of the interaction. The fourth step is enthronement. Begin using powerful statements that appeal to your subject's sense of personal value and importance. Be sure to keep your choice of words realistic. Don't overdo the enthronement phase, as this may cause your subject to resist and eventually reject you. No one likes being associated with someone who uses pure, meaningless flattery. A little flattery is all right, but the rest of your statements must be based on facts, and they must be expressed in a genuine manner. Unless your subject believes in what you're saying about them, continue adjusting your vein of thought until acceptance is achieved. The fifth phase is dependency. A person who feels that they are being given extra attention and value will soon become dependent on the other person. When this happens, intensify your enthronement efforts and start guiding your subject to what you want to have happen. Only at this point in the effort should you start indirectly utilizing your central intention. Prior to dependency, your main intention should remain dormant because you have to ensure that your subject is thoroughly within the envelope of seduction before you instruct your subject to do anything for you. If you play your cards right, you may be able to obtain satisfactory outcomes after a period of time. Your subject will become dependent on your words. You know, your words of appreciation and acceptance. This dependency alone can weaken the resistance of the toughest subjects. Is a tough person really tough? When the subject seems so tough that it's almost scary to think about trying to seduce them, you're most likely wrong about them. There's a reason why people want to be seen as tough. They're trying to protect their soft underside. From an evolutionary perspective, this makes complete sense. Take a look at the toughest and most armored animals: crocodiles, bears, lions, turtles, hedgehogs. Take a look at how these animals have adapted. The turtle has a tough shell that eagles have to drop from afar in order to crack. Crocodiles, who eat small turtles, have to swallow rocks to help break down the shell. Without the shell, the turtle is the most defenseless of animals. No fur, no claws, or anything else can defend from its predators. Sure, it has a strong bite, but apart from its mouth parts, a turtle without its shell is dinner for the next predator that comes along. Crocodiles have one of the toughest armors in the animal kingdom, and yet their undersides are soft and vulnerable to fellow crocodiles. They're fast to strike, and yet they're vastly limited by their other traits, which also limit them to particular environments only. Predators such as lions and tigers are amazingly strong and agile. They have to be, because Only skin and fur cover their internal organs. The bite force and strength of the bear also belies the fact that it only has fur to protect its abdominal cavity from the claws and teeth of other animals. The modern human can resort to different tactics in order to manufacture aural defense, and they can use this against other humans. Modern humans are prohibited by laws from resorting to physical violence, and thus the majority have adapted to defending themselves through social status and social class. A person's protection of themselves usually indicates elements that prevent others from taking potentially harmful action against them. Now, take the logic of the turtle shell and apply it to humans. What do you see? I bet you already know the answer. The more vulnerable a person is, the more likely it is they will create a tough shell to defend themselves from potential attacks. What the armor doesn't show is the soft underside and the mental and emotional vulnerabilities that a person tries so hard to hide from others. So, the answer to the question, is a tough person really tough, is self-evident. No, because a tough person is most likely hiding many vulnerabilities. As a seducer, and more importantly, an influencer, you must not let your first impressions of your subject hold you back from attempting to influence them. Don't quit simply because you're intimidated by how your subject presents themselves to others. Intimidation is the goal of aural defense. How can you discover a person's hidden weaknesses? The only way that you will be able to successfully identify the soft underbelly of your quarry is by paying close attention to the seemingly harmless details in their lives, such as choice of company or friends, nature of work or employment, status and nature of family, social status, class, and general background such as educational attainment, daily routines, obligations, and responsibilities. After discovering your subject's essential vulnerabilities, you, as a seducer, can move in quickly to separate them from the things that are used to bring comfort and security to them. You can do this by introducing different situations and experiences that they're not used to. In terms of seductive language, you can begin the separation effort by introducing new concepts to your subject, concepts that are contrary to what they believe in, but at the same time bring positive or desirable things into the equation. What should you look out for as a seducer? One of the biggest hindrances to your success as a seducer would be people who know and care about your subject. I'm not saying that a seducer is essentially evil or undesirable as a character. We all seduce others with different intentions in mind. It's completely up to you if you're going to be an ethical seducer or an unethical one. The same fact applies to individuals who wish to utilize the larger arc of influence and persuasion. You can either focus on mutual benefits or become a one-sided influencer. The art itself can be used indefinitely for different purposes, good or bad. Now, people who know and care about your subject can cause problems, especially if they realize what you're trying to do. They can warn your quarry that you are up to something and that they should be careful with you around. The obvious solution to this challenge is to become so desirable as a person that your subject will think that people are just plain wrong about you. It's essential that you maintain consistency in your words and actions. Don't stab your subject in the back when they are at their weakest point. It is during this crucial time that the seducer should maintain their stature and status within the dynamic so that future trust is established between two individuals. Number 12, undeniable proof. The language of seduction is powerful, but it can only go so far in proving that you are truly worth your subject's time and energy. Whatever your intentions may be in engaging your subject through seductive influence, you have to eventually show proof that your words ring true. From the very beginning, the transition from seductive language to seductive action can be rocky if you do not condition your subject to begin accepting your reasons for engaging in certain behavior. Remember these three words when presenting your case: and, but, and because. And can be used to link together disparate ideas in such a way that they appear to be logically associated with one another, when the opposite may be true. But should only be used when you wish to remove or delete something you've said earlier. This word is actually a subconscious sniping, and this tool can make the subject agree with something while adding a completely different concept which is more relevant to the seducer's central intention. Strategic use of the word because can create powerful and almost irreversible cause and effect relationships between the ideas. It doesn't matter if the first part of your statement and the second part are completely unrelated. By using the word because, you will trigger the causation process in the subject's mind automatically, and the subject will fill in the details themselves. Take note that these magic words in seduction will only work effectively if your subject already trusts your words and judgment. Remember that in the beginning, your subject's conscious mind will be in hyperdrive and will do its best to tear apart and reject input from you since the subject doesn't trust you completely yet. Now, if you've only just met the person that you're seducing, it would be best to make use of other techniques outlined in the first few parts of this book, as those techniques are designed for the initial state of seduction. Doesn't seduction chip away at the need to prove oneself to a subject? While it's certainly tantalizing to think that you only need words to carry out the most artful master plans, this isn't the case. Seductive language and seduction in general is actually based on the concept of buildup, or preparation for action, the same way that you use influence techniques so that the subject will eventually take action or agree with your central intention. As I've mentioned before, it's imperative to follow your words with actions. Your actions should be aligned with any promises that you have made to your subject. A seducer should never break their promises so that their reputation and name will remain intact. This will benefit you and not anybody else. The moment your reputation takes a hit because you weren't able to follow through with your seductive offers, that would be the time that you will scramble to pick up the pieces and recreate the seductive identity that you worked so hard to build. My subject is showing resistance to seduction. What should I do? Well, resistance is actually a good thing because it means that your subject is still open to the possibility of accepting whatever you have to offer, whatever you have in store for them. Seasoned practitioners of influence agree that the mere presence of resistance doesn't spell the end of the effort. You see, in order to openly resist someone, you have to feel strongly against what is being proposed or offered. In this scenario, the seducer's friend is the subject's own spectrum of emotions. Many seducers aren't aware of this, but you can actually accomplish a lot by appealing to another person's emotions, like publicity. Any kind of emotion is a good emotion, as it keeps the subject engaged in what you're saying, and its presence will prevent your subject from simply walking away from you. As a seducer, you should be more anxious about a subject who is so certain about what they want that they find nothing interesting in what you have to say. These individuals can be emotionally cold and distant from start to finish, and if you happen to encounter such a subject, you may have to call it a day unless you can find ways to trigger any kind of strong emotion in your subject. Of course, the more positive the emotion that you trigger, the better off you will be in the long run. However, when nothing seems to work, encountering any emotion from your subject gives you much better prospects for success than zero emotions. What could possibly thaw the coldest of individuals? Some people are extremely resilient and resistant in the face of seduction. These individuals are probably seducers themselves, and they are aware that people don't normally exert effort unless they have a central, vested interest. What's interesting about the situation is that no one acts without expecting something in return, even if that something is an immaterial reward. Humans are motivated to act because we want to improve our outlook in life and the resources that are available to us. This has always been the basis of action in human history. There is no single moment in human history that we acted in a vacuum or for no particular reason at all. We take action when something is to be gained, period. With these facts in mind, we return to the original question, is it still possible to engage a cold individual so that they will eventually become vulnerable to seduction? A closer look warrants an affirmative answer. However, the solution to this challenge is much more difficult than your usual seductive technique, sacrifice. The concept of sacrifice has always been associated with equally powerful concepts such as honor, truth, and even chivalry. Sacrificing oneself and thereby flipping the action-reward logic will prove to your subject that you are serious about what you're saying, and there is no one else in the world who would be willing to go to such great lengths to prove themselves. Obviously, this last resort isn't for everyone, because situations that call for seduction are unique and distinct from one another. Not every situation where seduction is applied warrants personal sacrifice. There are many situations where making a personal sacrifice for another person isn't worth your time or effort. Now I'd like you to join me in the next module. I'm Dr. Steve G. Jones, hoping you have an outstanding day.